Today is Friday, February 20th, 2009. This is Life, the Universe, and Everything, Writing Romance.
Okay. I'm going to let everybody introduce themselves, and then I'm just moderating for whatever that means. So we're going to...
I don't know what you're talking about. There's no fantasy in romance. There's a considerable amount of fantasy in romance. I don't know what your life is like, but...
That's not what it says in the catalog. Okay, so here, we'll go. Why don't we start with you?
So if you just go on last hour, I don't know the names.
I'm Tracy Hickman. I write fantasy books. I've done game design and stuff. And my wife and I have designed a board game called Saving Santa that should be out by Christmas.
We'll work on how that connects to romance.
Okay, we will.
I think it's a husband-wife thing. I stand in awe. Because if I had to write with my husband, I'd kill him. One time I was, I just had a baby, and I was weeping with postpartum stuff, and I had a book due in 2 weeks, and so he was typing for me, and he kept adding things. Because we had the screen on the piano bench in front of us, and I would dictate, and he would type, and I'd watch, and there were things going in my books that did not belong. He's a computer geek, so. My name's Lynn, and for those of you who saw me earlier, I write romance and fantasy, and that's it. This is my favorite conference of any time during the year. I love to do the great. Okay.
I'm Julie Wright. I write romance and everything, even when I don't mean to. Love. My next book is coming out in July. It's a time travel. I'm very excited about it. It's called Eyes Like Mine. I think everybody should buy a copy. And yeah, that's me. And you know, there's a chair right here.
There's a chair. Sorry.
Anyway, that's me.
I'm Stacey Whitman, and up until August, I was with Mirrorstone, which is the children's and young adult imprint of Wizards of the Coast. And now I freelance. I am starting to do some consulting editing for Tor, and I do a lot of copy editing, proofreading, and stuff in the community. So
she would be the one that you want to assault in the bathroom and slide your manuscripts under the stall too.
I was very proud of the fact I'd never done that yet. I'm Leslie Muir Lytle. I write romance. I write time travel, Scottish historical. I was the president of Romance Writers of America, the Utah chapter, last year. And a big family.
Okay, I'm not sure really how to direct this. Should we just start? Do you guys want to give your views on romance writing, or should we just open it up for questions? Sorry, you had my total brain drain at 10, so I have nothing left. Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to start out by saying that I think that there's a huge problem with people when they think of romance. They think of these heaving bosoms and bodice ripping, you know, women falling out of their corsets, and this really hunky, muscular man holding her in this rapturous pose. And I think romance is something quite a bit different from that. I think romance is the act of actually falling in love, and that moment of meeting of the minds where you recognize that, oh, this person understands me, they get me. You know, romance is the fact that my husband knows that if I'm really unhappy, he can hand me a package of Twinkies and a Dr. Pepper and the world is good again. That, to me, is romance. Maybe that's very simplified, but I think love actually goes beyond that, in that love is in everything we do. There's different kinds of labels and levels of love, and that there's love between, you know, a man and a woman. There's love between a mother and a daughter, and there's romance, not romance, but there's love in everything we do. And so I think sometimes people neglect the fact that that is what makes humans work so wonderfully, is that we have such an incredible capacity for love. There's my thought.
Okay, I'm good on
opinion.
Good with opinions, bad, you know, verbal. I'm a writer. I don't have to speak well, right? I think if you think about fantasy and science fiction, think about what percentage of that audience is female. And you think about the percentage of the audience for romance that is male is over 20% that reads romance now. So if you think about the crossovers for both genres, if you decide not to put any kind of a romantic line in your science fiction, you are losing about 20%, or you're alienating, or you could bring them in, you know, you could have fans for life. All you have to do is put a line of romance in there, and you will have female fans for life. It's like, and I'm sure you can all relate to this, it's like putting a BYU sticker on the front of your book, on your cover. And there are people who are you fans, I'm married to one, that wouldn't touch that book with a 10-foot pole because of the BYU sticker on the front of it. Or the opposite is true, a U of U sticker, whatever. But if you choose to alienate, you know, a possible audience, that to me is a waste. If you're a good writer, you're a good writer and you'll sell. And if you're a good writer, you can put romance in your novels.
Well, when you're talking in YA, it depends on what YA you're talking about. For middle grade, we generally don't get much more than puppy love, you know, first crushes, that kind of thing. But in young adult, for books for teens, it can be anywhere from first love to first sexual relationship, which I don't really go for myself personally, but there's a market for it. My experience is usually just that it makes the book more interesting if there is a little bit of that kind of tension in a young adult novel.
When I think of romance, I think of The Princess Bride. I think of the young boy in the film. And he looks at his grandfather and he says, "Is this a kissing book?" And yeah, it is. But his grandfather suckers him into it anyway. And in the end, the story touches this boy deeply because it is a romance, because it is a romantic book. And I think that I think of myself as a romantic. We'll get a second opinion. My other co-author, Margaret Weiss, has said that I'm the last of the romantics. But I think that our popular culture has tried to stomp romance out of the male view, much to our detriment. It submerges the whole side of our life. And I think that it's, we often talk about men getting in touch with their female side. And I think what they're actually trying to say in that is trying to get in touch with the romantic that is within us. Someone who can feel deeply about something other than a sports score. And be passionate about something, whether it's about a relationship, or whether it's about a cause, or whether it's about an ideal. All of those things, I think, are also bound up in the romantic ideal and the romantic notion. I think that this is also not just a men's issue, but I think that this is also a women's issue. Getting in touch with female archetypes and mythologies and understanding their meaning as well as part of what I think romance is involved. Nicole Estes' work, for example, and Women Who Run With the Wolves, I think speaks very clearly to a more basic sense of romance than just relationships, but also saving and warning aspects of romance as well. So I worry that we're in a society that is teaching us not to feel, either to be in denial of feeling, to be in denial of true relationships, or to suppress them. And so I like romance and write romance because I think that it opens that up again in people and speaks to that need that's in people.
I was thinking about a scene right at the beginning of Bronze Canticles, Tracy wrote. We wrote the Bronze Canticles together. Tracy wrote the scene that we had agreed on, and I think it kind of sums up the kind of romance that we want to portray. It's a little more real world, although it's set in a fantasy, because all it is a married couple snuggling, and you're snuggling in bed, which is not something you actually read very often. And in fact, I had a grandmother, you know, asking me, well, what book should I buy from my granddaughter? Would she enjoy these books? And I said, yes, but there is this one scene, but they're married and there's just snuggling. She goes, that's good. I'm getting that book. That's why she bought the book, because that was more real world than a lot of other things. And yet, we placed it in a fantasy.
But yeah, when the reason I am on this panel, in case you're wondering, Margaret Weiss and I wrote the Dragonlance series and Dragonlance Chronicles. Margaret wrote all the battle scenes. I wrote the romance scenes. It worked out better that way. So.
Okay. My personal opinion on romance is that everything is a romance. I mean, you can go to the scriptures. Is it Isaac and Rebecca? Is he the one that was at Eventide and Sire? I mean, it's all about possibility. That's Jacob, Rachel, Leah, and Rachel. still.
Yeah,
I can step with the older one who works for the younger one. But I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think we live... That's why I like romance. I think we live in a world that's a little bit hard-edged, and I think we have lost touch with some of the softer things. And I think one of the most wonderful things, it's the same thing I love about fantasy. One of the things I love the most about romance is it's all about possibility. It's all about two people meeting and what can come from that, and the world is your oyster. I think, what if we talk a little bit about nuts and bolts, about how do you create a romance and make it so that it doesn't feel forced, but it flows naturally onto the page, whether it's a straight romance, or you're putting romance into your fantasy, or you're writing mostly science fiction and fantasy, but you want a little bit of romance. I mean, think about Blade Runner. I mean, that is... Talk about a techno movie. But you know the thing I love the best about it is the romance. And it's so little and it's so small. That very last scene where there's a car and wind is blowing. I know I've got a Harrison Ford thing. Who said that to me? It's really embarrassing. Well, he was pretty hot as younger. But you know, it's all... I mean, that whole scene, that's your happily ever after. It's all about the possibilities. They've left the whole dark, you know, mechanical, technical world behind. And it's just... You're driving down the road, and the best is yet to come. That romance is such a hopeful thing, but it's difficult sometimes to take all that hope and all that possibility and wrestle it down and put it into characters and make it so it actually works. So I'd like to get everybody's opinion. Should we start this way? Am I giving you any time to think about that?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
How do you write a romance and make the characters, how do you make the romance so it actually works? So it doesn't feel forced and it doesn't feel fake. Like a certain trilogy.
Okay. We don't want to talk about 9-year-olds again. No. First of all, I would say it doesn't matter where you are in your fantasy or romance, whatever setting you're in, you can paint that in a romantic light. You can make the atmosphere romantic. You can make your characters romantic individually. But we were talking about this just a few minutes ago, before this panel started. And if you know your characters really, really well, just pick one of them, your hero or heroine, if you know them inside and out, know what they like, what they don't like, know their history, you know, where they came from, who's treated them wrong, who's treated them well. And if you know them, you will know what will attract them. You'll also know what pisses them off. And if you put both of those characteristics into the opposition, the hero, then, you know, what better combination to give you tension for your characters. So I would say knowing your characters inside and out before you ever start, or soon after you start, you know, stop, get to know them well, and go from there. I think you can throw at them what they're looking for and then wrap it up in a really difficult package to open.
The formulaic romance novel has to end with the guy getting the girl. It has to happen. I hate those things where, you know, I know that there's a lot of people that like these sorts of books, but the ones where, you know, somebody dies in the end and they have this horrible love life, they, you know, they didn't get what they want. I hate those kind. I know a lot of people love them because they're sweet or whatever. They just make you cry and feel crummy. I think I wasted time reading this book. Dang it. But I believe that in writing it, you mentioned the word tension. I think tension is absolutely important. Sexual tension between your hero and your heroine are absolutely vital. You have to have that discovery of each other. That is something that makes it work. The getting to know each other, the games that they play as far as getting to know each other, that learning how to cope with one another. That's what makes, I mean, everybody who falls in love for the first time, the delicious sense of not knowing yet, but wanting really bad to find out. And I think that's what makes a good romance work, is that discovery, that finding out. And sexual tension does not have to incorporate sex all the time. I mean, if they just go in and they, you know, immediately are sleeping together, well, that might be fun and all, but that doesn't exactly constitute romance. I don't.
Along with that, recently being actually one of the first books that I edited, it was a teen historical mystery fantasy, but there was a romantic side in it that was just a subplot, but also very important to the mystery. And I think it's very important if you're going to include a romance as a subplot, that it has bearing on the complexities of your story, and that it's not just thrown in as an afterthought. And the idea of allowing it to grow and allowing the tension to build became very important, but you might not always get it in your first draft, and so sometimes you have to, I know a lot of writers who write toward the end. And so you have to go back and see where are the places that maybe you're missing that tension and learn how to build it up at the beginning.
I usually start with the idea that romance is not about sex. It can be about anything else. Everything else. But just leaping in the sack, there's no romance in that. You know, there could be lust involved, passion certainly, but I've never found the actual act on the page terribly interesting. So I, in terms of technique, I'm a big fan of what we call the boot scene. Okay. If you ever watch Star Trek, you know, we have this slow dissolve from kissing, and the next thing you know, you see Captain Kirk sitting on the edge of the bed, putting on his boots. You know what happened. But we don't have to be there to see this, and it doesn't add anything to the romance at all to see this. Just skip over it. Romance has everything to do with sexual tension, but there's a difference between sexual and sex, and I always start with the idea that it is about everything but the act, which is ever so much more interesting to read about and tells us ever so much more about who we are. At least as far as the page is concerned.
Since we collaborate, one of the things we do when Tracy writes something romantic, he'll hand it to me and I'll read it. And there are times when I look at him and I say, a woman would never say that.
Never. Now, this is what a man thinks of a woman.
Or wishes. So then he'll hand me the red pen, the ubiquitous red pen, and say, okay, write what she would say. And so then I get it tossed back at me, and that's what we do. And I feel like we end up with a little more honesty that way because we have whole viewpoints.
The other thing I'd like to add is it's difficult to write romance, a straight romance, and not have any graphic sex in it. Most of my books are rated G, but I was really, really lucky that I had an editor when I turned in my first book, a romance editor, who said, oh, you're missing a couple sex scenes. So I just took out more stuff. And she read it, and she was really distracted, and had a, I was, you know, a little low man on the totem pole. She goes, oh, it's great, we'll publish it. And by the third book, with no graphic sex, they started to get really good feedback because there are really a lot. I don't know who was here for the romance and fantasy, but let me quote the numbers for you again. In December of 2007, there were 60,000 romantic fantasy books sold. In December of 2008, there were 100,000. For the week of December, that first week in December in 2008, 100,000 romantic fantasies sold. In 2007, for the first week, there were 300,000 romances sold. In 2008, the same week, there were 200,000 romances sold. So you can see how I think there, and who knows where those romance readers are defecting. I mean, maybe they're just Christmas shopping. I don't know what they're doing. But I think that it's easier, much easier, if you're writing a romantic fantasy, to get away with just shutting the door. I'm a big shut the door kind of gal. Because, you know, I mean, it's just, there's so many people out there who write it, and I would rather leave that up to them. It's not what I'm comfortable with. But I think you're really at an advantage if you're shooting for more of a, I mean, and I'd have to ask straight fantasy people how that works, but if you're shooting for a fantasy publisher, you're going to have a lot less stuff thrown at you, I would imagine, than if you're trying to go for a straight romance publisher. Though it can be done. It's just difficult to convince them that they don't want to see that. So you already have a good starting point. Do you guys have any questions that we could all sort of answer? Yes, in the front
cover. Getting back with what you said about, like, when you said your wife said a woman would never write this, or would never say this, I mean, how do you know, I mean, from a guy's perspective, how do you know that you're going into something that, you know, that your female protagonist is not realistic?
you don't know how to put this.
Yeah.
If If you can put a beard on the character, and the dialogue sounds the same, okay. I can't remember who it was who said this, and please forgive me for the boldness in saying so. But some of the biggest problems that we have with female characters in fantasy is that they are guys with breasts. That the female characters really have no concept of the female experience. And so I mean, seriously, where did we get chainmail bikinis from? This has seriously no application in weaponsmithing whatsoever. and so this is as a result of this is fantasy the way men write it, and this is a different kind of fantasy than we're talking about. Stating the obvious, men and women are different, but it goes way beyond physical. There's a completely different experience that of life that women live that men do not understand. And I think much to our detriment as men that we cannot, that we have such a difficult time understanding life from the feminine experience. That being said, it's a good idea to have a woman read your stuff, because they will tell you when the woman is acting stupidly. Okay? And they will tell you when they're acting in a way that women would not act, or doing things that women would not do, and does not make sense from the feminine perspective. I think it behooves us as writers, as male writers, especially if we're going to deal with anything off the sports page, if we're going to try to deal with life as it is lived and the human experience as it is lived, it behooves us, I think, as men, to come to a better understanding of the female experience. And our writing has to reflect that. Otherwise, it's very one-sided and unreal. So I think, practically speaking, that the best way is to have input, and to take that input honestly and use it.
I just wanted to add to that and say what he's saying about having someone read it, that's what you call an alpha reader. And so to have somebody in your life who you trust to look at your book in a way that isn't just going to be, yeah, it's great. You probably know about writing groups. Your alpha reader is the next step beyond your writing group. Once you've had it workshopped in your writing group, your alpha reader will read it all at once and be able to tell throughout the whole novel whether everything is coming together. And if that is one of your concerns, it's definitely important to get a woman alpha reader who you can say, I'm really interested in your perspective on this particular subject.
I'll make this really short. This is something that might help. On my honeymoon, actually, we were driving up to Idaho and no radio stations would come in, but this AM station, and it had on there an audio of the book or presentation called What Women Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women, or What Wives Wish Their Husbands Knew About Women, and What Men Wish Their Wives Knew About Men, or Husbands, whatever. But I'm sure you could Google it and find it, but this is the basic, and it has helped me my entire life with my husband. My 23 years I've been married, this has helped, I swear, at least once a week. They said, men are compartmentalized. We're both of us. He's a dresser drawer. He pulls out one drawer, he's going to think about work. He's going to think about work all day. He's not going to think about calling you because he's thinking about work. He's going to think about one thing. It doesn't have anything to do with you. You know, don't feel bad when he doesn't call you. On the other hand, everything that happens during the day to a woman relates to everything else that happens that day. Everything has an emotional tie. And if you forget to call her at lunch, it must mean this and this and this and this and this because it relates to everything. Where a man is just one thing at a time. You know, I'm not saying men can't multitask or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, men can separate things and women can't. So if you, you know, can put emotional ties in there for your when you're writing your women, you'll sound pretty true, I think.
Anybody else? Is there somebody behind you? Back there in the blue shirt? Sorry, I don't know your name, can't see it. Right there.
Great. Okay. I had a question for you in your last panel. Just what's the formula of writing a romance? How do you keep it from being cliche?
Who are you asking? Me?
Yeah.
You have to police your own writing. I'm sorry, I'm totally on the other side of the fence as far as writing groups go. Don't have one, never had one. First one I was in, critique group. With two friends of mine, one of them trashed my novel so badly I just about threw my hard drive out the window. So I just go it alone, and my first read is my editor. And I think that if you're the best judge of what's cliche and what's not. If you find yourself writing something that's cliche, stop and do something else. I think there are certain, I mean, I guess in fantasy, it, just like in romance, I mean, there are certain stereotypes that you can use, but it's up to you as the writer to figure out how to either take those and tweak them a little bit or just get rid of them entirely. But I don't think there's any hard and fast rule about how to get rid of them. I don't know, somebody else might have a different, anybody have a different opinion?
I've often heard that often your first solution to a problem is going to be a little bit more cliche than perhaps digging a little bit deeper. It probably depends on the situation because sometimes your first thought is going to be your best thought and you might overwork it, but it's something to think about that if you start thinking, is this getting stereotypical? Is this getting cliche? Like Lynn said, think about how you can tweak it. But also dig deeper and see how you can not just tweak it, but maybe turn it upside down or completely change it.
I was going to ask about the flip side of the coin about women writing that do you think there's something that we typically do wrong?
I am constantly amazed when I go to a book signing at the men who come to my table and say, I love your books. And I think, really? Did you know this is a chick book? I mean, I'm thrilled to pieces by it. And I think that sometimes, and it's something that I've heard a lot, is that women tend to romanticize their heroes. I mean, think of Mr. Darcy. The only way, I tell my husband all the time, if Mr. Darcy comes to my door, all bets are off, I hope you have fun with the kids, I'm out. I mean, I'm sorry. But the only way you're going to find Mr. Darcy is in Pride and Prejudice, because that man just does not exist. He is not your typical guy. But I think that when we're writing, I think this is a folly. Sometimes I think that we romanticize our men. We make them better than what men really are. We ignore the faults and stuff, and we make them these perfect, godlike beings. And I've heard that sometimes from male readers, is that they think, you know, no guy can live up to that. You set a standard that, you know, you've just made every woman in the world angry because they're never going to get that. And so I think just remembering that everybody has flaws, men included, and sometimes those flaws are... My husband is a huge diehard Star Wars fan. My bedroom looks like it belongs to a 10-year-old. It is really sad. There is... I mean, really. He's it's really horrific, but, and this is, in my opinion, a huge flaw in his character. But you know what? It's kind of endearing, and I love it about him. So just remember when you're writing that your men have flaws, and to make them kind of endearing, I think, a little bit. And I think that's okay.
Yes?
How do you handle it's impossible for writers to read everything. How do you handle the concern that maybe what you're writing has been written before? Maybe this...
Yeah, and then you just move on. Press it, move on. You just don't worry about it, because it's probably been written somewhere by somebody.
But not in the way that you.
But not the way you're going to write it, and it may not come to the same conclusion that you've come to.
Can I say one thing really fast about that? And even if it does, even if you, let's say you're the published author and somebody writes something that is uncannily similar to you, it's a lose-lose situation. Because if you go after somebody who, or your publisher gets after somebody, like there was a huge brouhaha of Nora Roberts and Janet Daly, and there was legitimate plagiarism, and it was lose-lose for both of them. You're going to have your audience, they're going to have their audience. Yes. And if you find yourself writing something that is just, I mean, maybe you're writing about four kids in war-torn Britain who walk through a wardrobe, you need to stop, take a step back, and go in a different direction. Send them through a garden gate or something. I don't know.
One of the things that this is related, trust me. One of the biggest problems that writers have is that they. Is the belief that they only have one book in them. that they're going to be martyr vigilantes. One of the most difficult things that we convince ourselves as writers is that we haven't written our best book yet. And it's very important that you keep that in mind always, that you have not written your best book yet.
Or the next book that will pay the electric and buy the groceries.
I told you I was going to work on that.
And I'm telling you this because, was it two summers ago? We kept telling our agent things. We had a conference, a phone conference with our agent. And we said, well, what did you think of our proposal? It was something we really loved. And he was like, well, I don't think I can sell it. He said, it had to do with a little more Greek fantasy and legend. Than NYA, and we thought this was really fun. And the people we bounced off thought it was really fun. Our agent said, I can't sell it. And he said, what else you got? So we told him, he said, I don't know, what else you got? You know, we ended up pitching him five different things. And he was like, well, what else you got? And I said, Tony will call him back in a minute. Because it was like everything we had in the hat, we had pulled out and said, what do you think? I don't know. You know, this is a good agent. This man is absolutely honest with us. And when he sells something, it's wonderful. So if he doesn't have confidence in it, we know we need to regroup. So we got off the phone. JC, look at me. What are we going to do? And I said, well, you know, I'm kind of thinking about, I don't know, Spartacus for fantasy. What do you think of that? You know, a bunch of slaves, some magic, some dragons. Is I like it. He got on the phone. He got our agent back, and he said, "What do you think of like Spartacus for fantasy?" He said, "I love it." That's what we're writing. Currently, we're on the second book, and so you must believe that there is more than one idea in there, and especially what you can do to help others believe that, and then have the confidence to go forward and write. Anyway, sorry.
There's somebody back here in a red shirt and somebody back there had a question? No? Yes? Yes, you.
I was going to make a comment. She was commenting on making your male characters too perfect. It's just the other way, too. They make the female characters too perfect. No woman can live up to how the female characters are in most books or most movies. So,
and most women don't want to wear chain mail bikinis.
What about you with this cute striped shirt?
thank you. I kind of wanted to ask some general advice from whoever is good at the love triangle thing. Like, how do you write that without one of the characters getting, like, shortchanged or feeling like, you know, the odd person out? Or, you know, how do you get that to work exactly?
Well, I'm sorry, if it's a love triangle, somebody's going to get
But you don't want, like, the people that hate the person they end up with and really like the person they don't end up with. Like, how do you get sympathy for everyone in equal turn is what I guess I'm trying to ask.
Okay. Apparently, you have written a threesome?
Yeah.
A triangle, right?
Yeah.
And you want everybody to win?
No.
Then whoever you don't want to win, bump them.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And focus your romance on the other two. Make him a minor plot, make him a side story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can make it an arranged, like an arranged relationship or a must-have relationship.
That's
and
what
somebody
it is.
On the outside. Yeah, that's possible.
Okay.
And there's a lot of built-in angst and potential there. But I think once your hero and
once your hero and heroine, even if there's a let's say we have hero A, heroine, and hero B, and these are the guys that are going to wind up together. These are the guys that are in a forced relationship. Once she decides that she's going to be with him, there has to be a level of commitment and something. There has to be a reason that your readers are not going to like him. At least that's my thought. I think it's very difficult to have a woman in love with two different guys at the same time, give them all equal time, and not have your read. It's like watching The Bachelor. You know, here's a guy with... Not that I ever watched The Bachelor. But here's a guy, and he's down to, what, the last three? And you're thinking, what are you doing with three women at once? I mean, it's gross. So you have... There's an ick factor. I'm big into ick factors today. There's an ick factor there that I think you have to be really careful with. I think there's some potential for some deep soul searching and some real drama, but it's a fine line. And I'm all about figuring it out yourself and making it work how you would make it work. I don't know that there's a answer to it.
Jeanette Rollison has a new book out. It was just recently released called My Fair Godmother, who answers this question beautifully. You've got two sisters who are really good friends, and they're in love with the same guy, and there's all sorts of little love triangle things going on. Somebody's going to get left out, and it was handled beautifully. I couldn't even describe it. Just go buy the book and read it.
What's it called?
My Fair Godmother. It was hilarious. She is so good at humor. Jeanette Rollison.
Okay, any other questions?
Okay, so if you are creating a conflict between the hero and the heroine, and you want to create that angst and love, how do you? And you want to give him some flaws and so and stuff that she gets irritated at. How do you make it so he doesn't come across all your questions? Sometimes there's things that you can do that she's irritated at. Does that make sense?
I think it's important to not make your flaws completely superficial. Or unless you're really going for superficial. Because I find that a lot of times the conflict in stories that I get most annoyed at are because of lack of communication, where if they just talked to each other, the story would end. They hate each other first. It's the constant retelling of Timmy the Shrew. How she hates him at first, but then she falls in love with him even though there's no good reason for it, and it's completely abusive, etc. So you need your flaws to be believable, yet overcomable, but not superficial.
Again, I think commitment works a deep deal on that. I mean, you can throw your characters into it, you can throw rocks at them, you can put them in a tree and set the tree on fire, you've got all of this stuff going on with your characters, but I think that there needs to reach a point where characters can say, I'm sorry. Deep, heartfelt apologies go a long way for absolute love. And I think there needs to reach a point where they're... Yeah, Pride and Prejudice is a great example of that, where, you know what, hey, I did screw up. I am so sorry. And then commitment comes into play as well, where, you know what, I know that things have been shaky, I know they've been rocky, but, hey, we're committed to this, and this is going to work out.
Okay, any other questions?
Let's take a look at Pride and Prejudice for just a second. Pride and Prejudice, we see the very thing you were talking about earlier in terms of compartmentalization of men, men's ability to compartmentalize. Mr. Darcy does exactly that. He compartmentalizes the problem of his friend and Jane. And so, okay, she's not that interested in him. You know, he really needs to be out. That whole problem is completely compartmentalized for him, as opposed to his relationship with Elizabeth, which he sees as a completely different thing.
Even though they're sisters,
and they're going to talk, and it's all one thing to hold of them. But Darcy sees them as completely different issues. Because he's a man. And therein is the problem between them. And eventually he comes to understand, in terms of this compartmentalized issue, I didn't have all the facts on this thing. I guess she really did like him, and yeah, it's okay if they get together, and he fixes that. But there's still, separate problems as far as he's concerned, except that he can see apparently there's some sort of relationship between them. And if he fixes this, maybe it'll influence the other one. Not that he's a man, okay? And so he does. He has compartmentalized this problem to the point where it's driving Elizabeth nuts. And she cannot understand how come he doesn't see the relationship between these issues. And therein is the difference between men and women. And therein is the source of part of their problem, is that they view things differently.
He stands in the rain and goes, what?
I'm asked to marry you, what? And so the source of their problem is the difference between men and women. I'm beginning to believe that, in fact, that women do not understand men, just as men do not understand women, and therein lies the source of a lot of books.
Fifty-two percent
of the market share. Now, I do want to say one other thing, which actually is a more broad stroke thing, but I think it deals specifically in terms of in romance writing and for that matter in fantasy writing, and that is, too often as writers we impose our modern sensibilities on a different time. People just behaved differently, had completely different social mores during Regency than we do today, to the point where it's almost a foreign language. If you're looking at how people behave in Jane Austen and how they speak to each other, more particularly in Jane Austen, when they speak to each other, it's all subtext. All of it is subtext. They never, ever say to each other what they mean. The men's job in Regency was to go out, ride horses, and shoot stuff, and do manly stuff. And the woman's job, and this is usually portrayed very interestingly as well, was to somehow sit like birds in a cage and do their needlepoint. Okay. And even when they were legitimately about the real business of what women were doing at that time, when the men showed up, they had to drop everything, sit down, and look like they had been doing nothing but needlepoint all day. This was their time. And Pride and Prejudice is very interesting. Oddly enough, I read a book about Nelson, Horatio Nelson, that talked about Pride and Prejudice. And in Pride and Prejudice, Jane's character represented the Regency time, the old woman. Elizabeth represented a more modern woman. She represented a woman who was out there and she'd walk for 20 miles and never think a thing about it, and her skirts were always dirty. Mr. Darcy, in the same sense, represented a modern, more modern man.
more rugged and self-sufficient than any of his companions. Yeah, certainly Mr. Bingley, who represented the old school. But again, as we want to write about a different time, it's important to us to understand that time and why their society acted the way it did, and to write it that way rather than try to impose our modern viewpoint on characters who are frankly living very different lives.
Just to add to that, this is actually a common problem in children's and young adult books, because often you have a heroine who, you want to have a heroine who your reader, especially a child reader, will relate to. The cold is fogging my brain. Identify with. And it's a fine line to walk. The Midwife's Apprentice is a big one that a lot of people, by Karen Cushman, and she's a Newbery winning author, but a lot of people have come back to it and said, would a girl in the 13th or 11th century, I don't remember, even be able to write, even as a nobleman's daughter, would she even be thinking the thoughts that this girl thinks about how dare her father set her up, or she doesn't want to marry this old man, because that would be how life was for a girl in her situation. And so it's a very fine line to walk, because you want to be able to have your protagonist appeal to a modern reader, yet just plunking a modern feminist down in 11th century or whatever isn't going to work for the history of the time. So, as Tracy said, you really have to know the time and figure out how you can play with those things so that maybe, I mean, every character is extraordinary for their time, or you wouldn't be writing about them. But how can you help them fit into their time as well?